Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration Service for the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
So as we allow the mindfulness bell to assist us in stopping, and in that radical stopping, we open. As my beloved Seamus reminded me, there we are a point of awareness within the mind of God. Now, that's not an idea that we ponder. That's a reality that we get to experience intimately. And the bell assists us. And so as we stop thinking, and that's not an action, that's a letting go. It's like turning off a television set. Once you've turned it off, then there is this silence that prevails. Could we know ourselves as that silence? It has been said that silence is the language of God. The Bible says, "Be still and know that I am God." And so something as benign and as simple as the ringing of a bell and the stopping of the narrative, the voices in our head, and you know those voices love to convene and chat and plan and strategize and criticize and fix and analyze. I've watched your minds for years, and all I really attempt to do is to turn your mind off. And then what happens? Well, then the potential is to meet in that field. Huh. Rumi says, out beyond the ideas of right thinking and wrong thinking, there is a field. And when the soul lies down in that field, that field of consciousness, that field of awareness, words are not necessary. Even the idea each other does not exist. That means there aren't two. There's just that one life. And then he says, I will meet you there. And so we meet in that field this Sunday morning. We meet in that point of awareness. And we smile. Because there is something that is so awake and aware within each one of us. You reference your knees. They're aware that they're knees, but they don't think of better days or future days when the knees will be happier or when they were better knees. This morning on the Zen calendar, it was Ram Dass, and he says, we must awaken from the illusion of a good day or a bad day. He said, if we have good days and bad days, well, then we will remember the good days of the past and will long for the good days of the future, when in truth they're just days, they're just moments. And so when we can smile to those troubled moments, and know that they moved us forward in life, they were part of our evolution, well, then we realize that life is not about just having the warm fuzzies, but sometimes there's a little pain along the way on this journey. And as my beloved friend Tom Costa, he said, that's why there's the owl in growth. In order to grow, in order to evolve, there needs to be a change from within. In the month of April, I'm exploring the theme, A New Design for Living. And every time I give myself a challenge to explore a greater sense of emergence, it reflects back to me, what was the old design for living, And as I reflect on my 73 years on the planet, I realize that the old design of living was so much quantified by external success or material gain. But this new design for living is nothing about money or prestige or titles. This new design for living is about knowing the interconnectedness with everything. We're teaching a beautiful class called The Art of Living by Thich Nhat Hanh. And the very first doorway to freedom, he calls emptiness. And emptiness means that we are all empty of the separate self. There is no you or me. There is only that point of awareness revealing itself through multiplicity. And each one of us is that. So everything and everyone is an aspect of this divine presence. And today I'm exploring the very first Sunday of the month by unveiling and undressing the practice of relationships. You can't escape relationships. We're having a relationship with our physical body. We're having a relationship with our emotional body. We're having a relationship with our mental body. We're having a relationship with the world. And so when we, and as Ram Dass, I quoted him previously, this beautiful saint who's no longer on the planet, said the hardest yoga of all is the yoga of relationships. Now that is his direct experience. But I would suggest to you that it isn't such a hard practice of yoga. Because yoga, the root word yoga, means to yoke back to source. And so every practice of yoga, there is hatha yoga, where you yoke back to the source through your body. Then there is jnana yoga, where you yoke back to source through the mind. And science of mind is a very jnana yoga teaching. There's bhakti yoga, which is the yoga of love, devotion. The Sufis are all about bhakti yoga, lover and beloved. Christianity is largely bhakti yoga, the devotion to the Christ in Jesus. And so we get to explore the yoga of love. There is karma yoga, which is the yoga of service. Anytime we help another, we're really helping the beloved, helping ourselves. So everything I do for another, I'm really doing for myself because there's only one here. And so I reference all these different yogic paths because it is about the yoga of relationship that we will explore this Sunday. And the first step is to enter into present moment awareness. In the beautiful class we're teaching this week, we explored the idea of impermanence. And impermanence basically says that change is the law of life. Everything must change. The young become the old. And yet there is that which doesn't change, that which is always there. And so we live in this seeming paradox. Life is about change and impermanence, but only, as Thich Nhat Hanh said, when you know that it's all impermanent, can you discover what is always there amidst the change. I see the smile of the universe. It was Emerson that says, it's only the finite self that wails and suffers. But this infinite presence lies stretched in smiling repose at the core of all life. So the invitation is, could we identify ourselves as that infinite smile within, in repose, in rest, being, and not identify with the finite self that wails and suffers and resists and struggles and analyzes and seeks to understand? How could we possibly understand the mystery of the universe with our little mind? It is said, trying to understand the mystery of belonging to the universe is like taking a flashlight to the sun, using our mind and trying to illuminate the sun with a flashlight. It can't be done with the local mind. And so then something within us smiles. We're not going to get there with our intellect. Oh, we can try. But what if we could open our heart and we could feel the love of the universe awakening within us? A love that can embrace the suffering on the planet and not be diminished in that very act. I wasn't going to share this, but since Michael reminded me, I probably would. When I got to the center this morning, there was a mother possum who had been run over by a car, and she was carrying 5 little marsupials, and they all were a victim of that drive-by. And I experienced a gut-wrenching connection and a sadness. And I kept struggling. How can I detach and disengage from my heart that was broken open? And then I came to the realization that I'm there to hold that space of compassion and forgiveness. And yet again, life is giving me another opportunity to not judge, to not try to fix, but to just be with what is and approach it with kindness, with tenderness, not only for the mother and her children, but for my own self, knowing that I'm not separate. And so something was expanded in that holy instant by not turning away, by not pretending that, oh, I'm just fine, because I was anything but fine. And so when I saw Tia, my little boy could fall into her arms and go through his own sadness. And by sharing that with just another human being, I was able to touch the moment with compassion. And that's probably all we ever do in relationships, is to touch each moment with kindness and compassion. Take a deep inhalation. And as Thich Nhat Hanh would say, we are all impermanent at the finite level. But at the spiritual level, we were never born and we never die. We just continue on. So maybe I'll say to the mother and her children, happy continuation day. As we hold you in the light, knowing that you were seen and loved and that your lives mattered. And so with a playful curiosity, I invite you to open your eyes and enter into the room. My beloved Marie Perez in the revealing service was sharing how she has been listening to the birds, and she makes little bird-like sounds, and there's kind of a reciprocity. And I said, I knew you were strange, Marie, but the stranger you get, the more I love you. I have a penguin up here. Now, is this penguin a real penguin? Well, he's my spirit animal, and he's there to assist me. So as Marie was sharing about her relationship with the birds, I flashed on a memory. 1972, Franco Zeffirelli, the movie Brother, Son, and Sister Moon, the story of St. Francis of Assisi. And when St. Francis came back from the Crusades, he was a very battered and worn down young man of privilege in Assisi. His father was somebody who had a very affluent style of living, but St. Francis had seen hell in the Crusades. In fact, someone asked him, why would God choose to have you reveal his mystery? And St. Francis said, because God could find no more lowly sinner than myself. So we can only imagine what St. Francis experienced on the Crusades. But he came back heavy in fever, and he was in his bed, and his mother was attending to him, and the priests were there. It's a big Catholic hierarchy. And the father was very prestigious at the time. And all of a sudden, St. Francis came out of this stupor that he was in by the sound of a bird that he heard out on the rooftops. And here is this half-crazed young St. Francis in a white shroud. He kind of looked like you, Angkor. And he's standing up there, and he sees the bird on the rooftops, and barefooted, he walks out to the bird. And the bird waits for him, and he lands on his hand. And St. Francis, this was his, you might say, resurrection. This was his coming out of this place that he had identified with as a very wealthy, affluent young man in Assisi, you know, highly controlled by the Catholic Church. And he came back as a humble servant for God, and everything, you might say, went to hell in a handbasket. He could no longer be the son of his affluent father. He said, my father is the one that is everywhere. And he found it in the birds. He found it in the lepers. He found it in the animals in the street. And we know a whole order of being is called the Franciscan movement. In fact, Richard Rohr, one of my favorite teachers, is a Franciscan monk. They had the courage to step out of the institution and to speak from the heart. And it was St. Francis that said, brother, sun, sister, moon. He recognized that they were all his relations. So maybe he was a little shaman in a... And, you know, he would say that when we surrender to this, what he called the Father, he will give us everything we need in advance of our asking. He doesn't deny the little birds. He doesn't deny the this. So could we have a relationship with this power and this presence that's the Pachamama of the universe and know that we're all connected? And there's a whole different design for living. The reason I chose that for the theme for April was one of the last books that Ernest Holmes wrote was called A New Design for Living. And of course, Ernest Holmes in the 1950s, when he created that book, it was all about using your mind to create what you want. I'm not that kind of religious science minister at all anymore, because I realize that we have to transcend the mind. And it's not about ordering the universe around to serve this human. It's about this human surrendering to something so much greater so that I could be an instrument for the divine. That's what St. Francis's beautiful prayer, may I be an instrument for the divine. And then when you surrender to that, you realize that that then begins to reveal to you the mysteries of belonging. And it's never been about you. It's always been about that something, that ineffable something that we connect in. And then everything becomes a gospel. And gospel means good news. Everything from the singing of the bird outside your window is calling you into a relationship. There's that word, relationship. So what kind of relationships are you having? In the lovely class we're teaching, Thich Nhat Hanh uses the Buddhist practices of mindfulness, and he talks about taking refuge. Now, these are foreign words to many of us in the West, but taking refuge means to surrender into. So what do we take refuge in? You take refuge in the Buddha consciousness, which is the awakened presence, which is that point of awareness that isn't about you, that's so much vaster than you. You know, and just look at your hands, how they're filled with awareness, but yet they don't think. So we get to play with that, Terry boy. Start playing with awareness. Watch the fungi movie again. There's awareness in the fungi. Does it think? No. But it's fully awake. It's aware. The genes in your body, the cells in your body have intelligence. But do they have thoughts and opinions and history? They don't go on and pule about what was in the past. And so when we begin to identify with this something within the physical body, the emotional body, the mental body that's alive and on fire with truth, well, it's like we carry this mask of false identification, and hopefully, by me spouting these little ideas, there are cracks in this shell that you've been carting around as me. And when that me shell begins to crack, there's the potential to go within and discover there's an ocean of truth hiding right there within your being. It was Thomas Merton that called it a hidden wholeness. So could we start identifying with this hidden wholeness, with this perception of wholeness? It was Ernest Holmes that said it is the perception of wholeness that's all healing. So when we begin to see the wholeness, when a relationship ends, it's because something new is beginning to emerge. So was it, anybody has been in a relationship that ended besides me? And when it ends, well, then you get to have a relationship with this something within yourself. And you thought it was falsely identified as something of a two, but really there is no two. And every relationship we have in a strange sort of way is sacred, was necessary. You know, everything is perfect just as it is. And you know how you know that? Because it is. Now, does that sound silly? No, that sounds profound. So last week I received a text from my prayer partner in Canada, and it was a little YouTube video, and it was called Die Wise by a man, a Canadian, who wrote a book called Die Wise. And he talks about us in the Western world and how we have a fear of death. And it's the fear of death that makes us hold it at bay. He says, but when you learn to embrace every, like Thich Nhat Hanh would say, every moment you're dying to that moment. Every exhalation you're dying to that breath and you're breathing in a new breath. So when death becomes a way of life, then you're no longer afraid of it. It says in the Bible, die daily to be born again in me. So now what would that mean? That means you die to the separate self and you're born again in the Buddha consciousness, the Christ consciousness, the awakened awareness. Daily, moment to moment. It says in the Quran, die before you die. Die to that old idea of you as a, and you can fill in the blank. You know, we've identified with all these external aspects of ourself. That was the old design for living. But when you realize you're none of that, well, then you're free to be like the bird, Marie, who pauses for a while on boughs too slight, yet feels them give way beneath her, yet sings knowing she hath wings. So what if the oracle, what if the teacher in your case would be the bird? And the fact that you can listen to it with your heart and not with your head, well, then the bird will sing a song to you and you begin to have a relationship. Now, are you going crazy? I think you're expanding your capacity. And remember, it's our capacity that's important. It was Buddha himself that says we don't learn from experience. We learn from our capacity to open to experience. So Susan and Avery, I've seen them on Facebook traveling around the universe in some kind of Winnebago situation. And now they've stopped and they get to dig a deep well in Fayetteville, Tennessee. Is that Alabama? Fayetteville. Beautiful little town, nice little town square. So there's something about stopping and putting down roots. You know, I was so much of a dilettante and a Renaissance man, a jack of all trades, a master of none, until for some strange reason, I got the gig of coming to Huntsville, Alabama. Judy Graff was on the board at the time, and I was going to try on this crazy idea of me as a minister. You know, the idea of a minister is not something I sought. I didn't want to be this. I was pulled out of the chorus line because I could give a talk, and they kept shoving me up in front of people, and they liked what they heard. So all of a sudden, I went from the chorus line to being the star of the show, and I thought, well, and in that forced design that I didn't choose, something has evolved and grown. And as I explore this new design for living, I realize that the divine order in that was, it's all about the evolution of consciousness. Now, threaded in the Science of Mind text that was written in 1923, and it really needs to be refurbished. But there are these threads of truth. And the idea of truth, it says Oliver Wendell Holmes, the truth is incontrovertible. So what if we're here to find that thread of truth that weaves it all together? And in the Science of Mind, they talk about involution and evolution. That when we begin to evolve within ourselves, well, then consciousness has the opportunity to evolve within each other, because we inter are. That's the idea of impermanence. You and I are really connected. We're the same life. And so when Nancy awakens and David awakens, or when Lee and Nancy awaken together in a shared relationship, they potentiate that emerging consciousness. I've been with my beloved husband for 46 years now, and it hasn't been easy because he is very, very mental, and he's a triple one in numerology, which means he has to have his way. He loves to be in charge. He loves to tell me what to do. And I'm only a double one. So his triple one, he says, outmatches my double one. And so learning to be in relationship with someone and to have harmony and to grow together, we have to give each other space to grow. And isn't that beautiful? At this stage of life, we're not here to have them fit into the old design where you do what I tell you and you fit into the mold that I give you. Bless you. But I want you to flower and unfold as the unique expression of who you were always meant to be. A creative expression of the one life, and it's always, always fresh. It's always alive. And you know you're getting more permeable to the universe when you can hear the song of the bird and it's singing directly to you, because they're all our relationships. So could we be, and it was my teacher, Llewellyn Von Lee, one of my Sufi teachers, he says you have to have a screw loose to be on the spiritual path. You can't be so tightly wired that you can't play improvisational jazz. You know, there's certain people I know in the musical world, they call them the readers. All they can do is read the notes. But then you get someone like Avery, and he gets on a keyboard, and it's like the universe is playing through him. Now, is one right and the other wrong? No, they're both valid. But could we get to the place where we become an instrument for this something and we're not attached to the outcome? Yeah, and then you'll hear these threads of truth. One of the greatest threads I heard was from the Bhagavad Gita, which says, is you are not the doer. Jesus said, I of myself do nothing. It's this force within that does the work. And the second thing in the Gita, it says, have no attachment to the outcome of your labor. Now, we in the Western world, in the old design for living, we wanted it to look the way we wanted it to look. We had this idea, this vision, and I can remember in the old Science of Mind says, you need to get really clear on what you want, and then you know when you state and declare, and this is what I want. Well, what if you don't have the right idea? You know, for anything, for Mr. Right or Miss Right or the right and perfect job. This is the last thing I said I would ever go was to Alabama. I said it's the only state I'll never move to. The only one that I said I'll never be in relationship with was with John Stoddart, because he broke up my relationship in college and I hated him. I said anybody but him. Now I've been with him for 46 years. I met him 51 years ago. Hated him for the first five. Now I'm madly in love with this one. So I don't have a clue, obviously. And I said I would never be in a religion, because religion to me was the opiate of the people. I'm telling that to Finn. But yet look at me now. And I don't consider religious science or what we call Centers for Spiritual Living a religion. We are a spiritual community that's all about involution and evolution. And one of the great truths that Ernest Holmes awoke to, and remember, Ernest Holmes was a synthesizer, and a synthesizer is someone who takes the truth from here and takes the truth from there. When I first began to read Sri Aurobindo, I realized science of mind is applied Hinduism. In Hinduism, they talk about Brahman, which is the one life, which we all are a part of. Then the Atman is the individual soul forever expanding. So we are, the Atman is the Brahman, and to know ourselves in the context that there's only one creative force, you could call it God, the essence, and we are an aspect of that. So then we have this essential self. And when I taught my ministerial classes, the last few, we started off with a class that Wanda Gale and I put together called Living the Essential Self. And it's all about finding what that self is that's there, that's always been there, that awakens within us when we're ready for it to awaken. Now, it's not going to be comfortable, because what's going to have to happen is the old design for living is going to burn away. It's not what you thought it was. It isn't going to be happily ever after, you know, and sometimes if you've been in a dysfunctional marriage, sometimes you have to let go. It's not going to mean that you're baptized in the Christian church and you're going to have to be forever and ever a Catholic or a Lutheran in my, you know, when you decided that that container was too small for a young gay man. My beloved Adam, his wife goes to the big Baptist church, and he remembers a young man in our satsangs who was raised in the Orthodox traditions, who was also a gay man. And when they would start railing about it, they're an abomination in God's eyes, he would stand up in church. And he said, if you're going to condemn me to my face. So beloved Adam said, my wife wants me to go to church. And he says, I'm going to tell you, David, if he starts to rail and he gets on this rant because of the anti-trans movement, he says, you know, I'm going to stand up. And I says, but you're not gay. He says, but my spiritual father is. And I said, no, you don't need to turn the tables in the temple just because somebody else did. I said, sometimes you can just leave if it doesn't suit you. You know, I tried to be part of the interfaith movement, and that didn't do so well because I was condemned by so many of them on Sunday mornings because I wasn't openly, you know what. And I remember they asked me to speak at the temple. And the first thing I said, you know, there are no chosen people. Well, I think half of the group walked out of the room. I said, how could God choose one over another? So I realized maybe it's not good for me to do the interfaith thing. I'll just stick here in my own kettle of fish and dare to say the things, because you have to be willing to speak truth to power in a strange sort of way. That's why I love the fact that Pope Francis might be going to Kyiv in a tacit sort of way, saying, I support this little man named Zelensky. You know, I've found this favorite show on Netflix, and it's called Servant of the People. And it's the two-year series that was in Ukraine from 2015, right after Crimea was taken by Russia. And here's this fictional story of a school teacher who was elected the president of Ukraine, and all because he wanted to go from the old design of being an authoritarian, autocratic, corrupt government into one that's all about serving the people. And here you see fiction becoming actual, the living reality. And it just kind of blows my mind that someone who was an actor, a comedian, who could poke fun at the institutions and could create a groundswell within the Ukrainian people, he's now like a hero, not only for his country, but for the world. You know, isn't it the Bible that says, and a child shall lead them? I'm not saying he's a child, but I gave Gigi the cover of The New Yorker. And because, you never know what props I'm going to need, because he's on the cover, this little tiny man holding up the Ukraine flag amidst all the bombs and the darkness, he's standing there with hope. And someone said that there is a Russian hit squad that's going to try to take him out. But you know, that would be the dumbest thing to do, because then he would become a martyr, and he would become, he's already a hero for me and for so many others. And so what if we could learn that the new design for living is about action? You know, we have a beautiful thing. People call me and they ask me to do spiritual mind treatment, and I'm happy to do that for you because it's wonderful. But then there's also a saying that says, treat and move your feet. It's not enough just to pray. Then you have to move into action. Remember when they said they were going to give him a ride? And he says, I don't need a ride. I need some bombs. You know, I need some planes. I need to have someone train my people how to shoot an assault rifle. And when I saw the grandmother who says, I've never shot anything in my whole life, but teach me how to use that assault rifle because I'm going to defend my homeland. Now, I went from being a pacifist to someone who supports a human being that will stand up for what they believe in. So what if that's the new design for living? It's about finding a way to move into action in some way that is in congruency with your soul, with your heart, with your call to be on this planet at this particular time. Adam wants to be a minister, and he asked how to train for that. And I said, well, one thing, Adam, I don't want you to be an institutional minister because you wouldn't fit in. You know, you've got to be willing to step out of the institution and into an authentic expression of who you are. That's what happened to St. Francis. He didn't fit in the container called the Catholic Church. I'm surprised that they kept him in as a Franciscan monk. I'm sure there's a backstory there. But he was speaking the truth about oneness and interconnectedness. I'm inspired largely by Mark Nepo's little book, Things That Join the Sea and Sky. And he's a man that survived cancer twice and came back a changed individual. And he drops little pearls. And this is the one he said. He said, it is through our relationships that we become alive and that we heal ourselves. You know, when I will have a stomach ache every now and then, I'll get up in the middle of the night because the stomach ache is hurting, and I'll put on a Thich Nhat Hanh video about meeting the suffering. And the first thing he has to do is have a relationship with your pain. You know, we could medicate the pain, get rid of the pain, or we could breathe into the pain and touch the pain. And just in touching the physical pain, you know, it has a way of just letting go. And then maybe there's an emotional issue. And he says, so could we touch that emotional issue with compassion, with tenderness? And when that, it's just like a crying baby. When you hold that crying baby, I watch Chris walk around with his cats, and I know that they're held in the arms of love. Now, is he out there trying to fix them? No, he's just providing a space. And in that resonating space, there's a relationship heart to heart. And so what if it, when we're in relationship with our pain, with our suffering, with our pain body, with our thoughts, instead of trying to get rid of, you know, analyzing Andy, analyzing Andy's trying to give you some information, Terry. You can just smile because he'll show up every single day. So will controlling Curtis. He wants to be in control. And then you have a relationship with these parts of yourself. You're not at war within yourself. And that's a part of the healing. We must have relationship with the very thing that we're trying to get away from. In this beautiful Dying Wise video, at the end of it, he says something counterintuitive. He said, instead of always seeking happiness, he says, first open to your unhappiness and find the root of the unhappiness. And only then will you find the happiness. He said, and always seeking and striving for wealth, he says, open to your poverty and see where this poverty is really originating. It's counterintuitive because in science of mind, they say, know what you want and deny what you don't want. It's just the opposite. Observe where you're blocked. Observe where the darkness is. Observe where the contraction is. And then be the opening space. Be the capacity. Tia had a transformation with her mother in a dream. It wasn't the mother that she had grown up thinking she was. There was this different thing. And it's because Tia had opened a space in her and there was this shift taking place. I think that's why the tears were coming on Sunday. Tears of gratitude. I'm not too old to evolve. To evolve out of bitterness and resentment into gratitude and compassion and forgiveness. Isn't that wonderful? Then you look at the perceived enemy and you don't call him the enemy anymore. Maybe they were your greatest teacher. So that's what Mark Nepo is saying. He says, we will be changed in life by everything and everyone that we meet. I was changed by that possum and her babies out there. It really was gut-wrenching for me. And I was, you know, and I'm so grateful that I could be present with that. Jean Ann gave me a cocoon. She gave me two cocoons. And one of them, I don't want to say gave birth, whatever happens in a cocoon when the butterfly crawls out of it, and all of a sudden she was in my house, and she was my steward, and I picked flowers on the dining room table for her, saying, drink away. But I couldn't force her to drink. Then I made a special soup for her with mud and this, and I'm trying to get her to drink, and she wouldn't drink. And I'm getting angry at the butterfly because I'm doing everything. I was codependent. And then the butterfly, after 3 days, I found her on the floor. She had, you know, and I was grieving. But the other butterfly didn't emerge. And so I gave Jean Ann back the container with the chrysalis. And it was 6 months later, just through patience, that little butterfly emerged in that chrysalis. So what if these little beings come in? Everything and everyone comes in to show us where we are. Are we in that place, I've got to fix it? Or can we be just present with it? As Tia reminded me this morning, our heartfelt attempts, clumsy as they are the seeds that we have that will restore the world. As clumsy as you are, Tia, they restore the world. And she knows I say that with absolute love. So could we, and you know, in the class, Thich Nhat Hanh has a beautiful way of teaching. He says, within stored consciousness, which is in our subconscious mind, we have all these seeds that have been planted. You know, the seed that you were planted in the church, that you were born in sin, and that you have to repent in order to be whatever. Those seeds are in there. We also have the seeds of forgiveness in there, the seeds of criticism and judgment. My mother was very critical and judgmental, but she called it discerning. So, and Thich Nhat Hanh asked the questions, what seeds are you watering? Are you watering the seeds of acceptance? Are you watering the seeds of hope? Or are you watering the seeds of condemnation and anger and bitterness? And he says, in every moment, we're at choice point. Choose you this day who you will serve. Are you going to serve the narrative of the mind? Or are you going to serve the expanded love of the universe? And then play with that. And then maybe a baby squirrel will fall out of its nest. And Chris will say, this too is good, this too is God, and it's my job now to nurture this thing until he can find his own. Now, who was the one that was blessed by that? Was it Chris, or was it I would say Chris got more out of it than the squirrel, even though the squirrel lived. All the spiritual traditions speak about renewal through relationship, and all spiritual traditions agree that God, or the spirit of the universe, or the ultimate bareness of being, or whatever name you want to give to this essence, and what is God but a simple essence, says Goethe, the cost of which is nothing less than everything. So what if this simple essence is everywhere? Angkor knows it. He was just in the jungles of Brazil. It was everywhere around him. He brought it back. The essence is right there sitting and looking at me. So this essence, all agree that whatever you call this essence, it remains an indwelling presence until it's revealed in the world through relationships. I'm having a relationship with a penguin. Now, is it an invisible penguin or is it a physical penguin? Yes. I'm having a relationship with God. Is it a physical God or an invisible God? Yes. I'm having a relationship with you, but if there's only one here, am I having a relationship with myself? Yeah. And so then we live in paradox. You know, it's all good. It was Carl Jung, his last book was called The Answer to Job. And one of my teachers who lives in me, she said, this is the only book you'll ever need, David. Well, when someone says that, you go get the book, The Answer to Job. And basically, the skinny of Carl Jung says, he who does not know that the God of darkness and the God of light does not know God. Basically, story of, you know, Job and God and the devil are arguing who's got the better people on the planet. Jung says, there can only be one power, there can't be two. So when the answer to Job is that God and the devil are one. Now, would most Christians want that? No, because we want the force of evil and the force of good. Well, what if there's only one life, one simple essence, and we get to explore it? In time, meaning is revealed through relationships. And of course, we need to be alone, and then we need to be together again. Of course, we need to retreat and go within ourselves, and then we need to run into each other's arms. Every time I see Michael, I go running into his arms. When I saw Anchor, I went running into his arms. And yet, still, we need to retreat. We need to go off. We need to find ourselves. And he says, of course, we need to retreat, then run into each other's arms. But the beauty is that this cycle of relationship is never done. You never get to the final ending point. The journey is the destination. So Thich Nhat Hanh, in his little book called Being Peace, the subtitle is, peace is not the destination, peace is the journey. So every moment, am I journeying in peace? It's called the pollen path. Beauty in front of me, beauty above me, beauty below me. I am on the pollen path. And as Lee and Nancy reminded me, all we ever have is the moment. And yet we're so conditioned in that old design for living to have a goal, an external goal, something I can aspire toward. And then you reach the goal and you die. No. And it's never done, he says. And with each turn of the relationship, we are transformed. We are transformed. We're like the butterfly. You know, everything is a metaphor. And think of the, you know, I saw this thing on Nova the other night, and it's fun to watch just nature things, because if you can discern it, Marie Perez, you can hear this language of the universe. And it started off with the mystery of the butterflies and how when they lay their simple egg, they have the intelligence to put it on a plant that will feed the larva when it starts to grow. It'll sustain it. The butterfly also has the capacity to find the right and perfect butterfly, because they get to have sex, guess what? And they get to drink from the flowers. All the fun is when you get to be the butterfly, even though their lifespan isn't that long. But when the butterfly gives itself to the egg becomes the larva, then its design for living is to eat as much and get as fat as you can while you're on this planet. And so those little caterpillars eat, and they have an intelligence that can ward off other predators. They know how to eat like the milkweed, which is toxic to some of the other predators that would eat them. And then comes a stage when the caterpillar has to be transformed. It has to literally become liquid. And it goes into this thing called a cocoon. And maybe that's what we're creating here, as a cocoon for transformation. But they say, those who talk about the butterflies, there are imaginal cells within this liquid goo that knows how to create the beauty of the butterfly. And then there's an intelligence that knows how to eat out of that chrysalis, and it takes the strength to eat out of it, to give it the strength to fly. It was Nikos Katsenzakis who said, "The saddest moment in my whole life," he's from Greece, "was when I was walking over the fields of Crete, and I saw a butterfly emerging from the cocoon, and it was a cold morning in Crete, so I put my breath, trying to help the butterfly, and in my attempt to help it, the butterfly died." And he said, if I could have just trusted in the intelligence within that. So maybe whatever trials and tribulations we go through, it's necessary for us to have this relationship with our emerging self. And so that's why there is the Awen growth. There's going to be some pain as we die to this old design for living and we open to this new relationship with the universe. Okay, we got a few minutes. I'm going to ask my brother Raul to go to the bell, and I'm going to take us into a little meditation where we can have a relationship to what is. Now, most of us, well, I would say all of us, have relationships that are human, and we have relationships maybe with four-leggeds. And what we bring to that relationship is up to us. If we have a projection onto the other, well, what we're doing is then we're denying them the freedom to unfold as who they are. So, Raul, if you'd like to ring the bell. Oh, you can smile when you hear the bell. In the week-long retreat that I did with Thich Nhat Hanh in the year 2000, we were admonished to be silent throughout the whole retreat. No cell phones, no television, no distractions, no books, no conversation. And we would walk mindfully in silence. We would eat in silence. And when the bell would ring, we would stop whatever we were doing. And we would go within. And we would meet ourself in a relationship with that breath, because all of life, he said, is just breathing in and breathing out. And when you realize that all we really have is the breath, in fact, our spirit entered on the breath and our spirit will leave on the breath. And so we hear the ding. Something said yes. That's the universe's confirmation. It's all about the breath. And breath is another word for spirit. So we smile as the breath becomes conscious within us. We're having a relationship with it. oftentimes when people get really absorbed in their narrative, in their emotional body, their breathing becomes labored. And instead of trying to analyze the narrative of the suffering, frequently I'll just say to them, exhale. And as they exhale, I say, let go of whatever it is that's creating this contraction and this suffering. And without really understanding what that is, the willingness to surrender, you know, in the Sufi tradition, they say, we are here to give Allah, God, the one thing that Allah, God, does not have. And you might say, well, what is the one thing that Allah, that God does not have? And the answer to that is, God doesn't have your problem. Now, we could have a little snicker there. So could we be willing to offer our problem, our perceived problem, on the altar of the universe, no longer identifying with it as something that's real, but recognize that it's a construct of our emotional, mental bodies that have come together with a belief or a conclusion that has created a construct that is the domain of suffering in our pain body. And our pain body loves the problem. It identifies with the problem. It wants to share the problem with the whole world. But the problem isn't real. And so in this holy instant of now, in this relationship with this presence that is smiling from within, I invite you to place your problem on the altar. And even for a period of time, a few minutes, we are free. And we smile. Now we ask ourselves, do I need to pick up that problem again and put it in my emotional body and run around and tell the world my problem? Or could I just leave that perceived problem on the altar? Let it die. Adam and I buried that beautiful mother with her little babies in this big pot by the shed. And she's laid out, and we covered her, and we planted a daylily on top. And so she's now physically not alive, but her spirit has been honored here this Sunday morning. And what if we know ourselves as a spiritual being? And perhaps we have some that are no longer on the physical plane, but we know that their spirit endures because spirit was never born and spirit never dies. And that makes death not so much the enemy, but it's a constant companion for life. And we can then die wise, knowing that who we are, in truth, never dies. And so I smile to all the ancestors that live in me, and to that sweet, sweet mother who was tending her little babies this morning when she had an encounter with a roodadoo. A roodadoo is a four-wheeled vehicle that goes down the street, and it's not really friendly to our four-leggeds. I've had three dogs meet the roodadoo, and each time my heart was broken. And so we're called to compassion, we're called to forgiveness, we're called to a radical acceptance of the things I cannot change, and yet the courage to change the things I can in this impermanent world. So this Sunday morning, I invite you to open to the practice of relationship with your physical body as you're sitting in the chair. You might want to just align your spine. For 20 years, I taught yoga, hatha yoga. And what I learned from those wonderful classes is that the body can be a doorway to the witness, which is the awakened self within. And so we could embrace our physical body and smile to it. Just by aligning the spine, my body smiles. Thich Nhat Hanh says, I don't exercise to put my body in shape. He says, I exercise because it feels good for my body to move. So what if when we go for our walks, we enjoy this physical aspect of this wonderful body that has arms and legs, that can smell the beautiful flowers. My lilacs are blooming in the garden. And to just stop long enough to put my nose to a lilac and drink in that fragrance, it's a relationship I'm having with a flower. Is it that simple? I would suggest it is. To stop, to look, see the divine everywhere, and then to listen to your heart as it begins to unveil the next deeper message. We enter a new design for living by our willingness to step out of the old design. And it says in the Science of Mind, you must deny before you can affirm. You must be willing to step off of first base if you want to get to second base. If you're on the trapeze of life, you must be willing to let go of the trapeze of familiarity and then leap into the next trapeze of possibility. It is Emerson that says the past is over and forgotten. And he says, but all that is sacred is the coming, is the emerging something. So as he spoke to the Harvard Divinity School in 1843, he says, let go of the old design for living. He says, let go of your God of the intellect and your God of tradition. And in this new design, he said, let your soul be set on fire with a truth that comes from within. Now, the old design does not appreciate when the new design speaks its truth. To let go of your religion of tradition and your belief system that has been entrenched in you and water the seeds of possibility and uncertainty and the emergence of a new life here on planet Earth. This is the invitation that relationships offer us. And so I invite you to smile to the yoga of relationships this Sunday morning. And wherever you go, know that everything and everyone that you meet is here to assist you in the transformation of consciousness at the deepest level. I hear that song, Brother Sun, Sister Moon. I see St. Francis walking on the rooftops with his hand reached out to the little bird. I see the little bird singing its song and landing on his hand. I see him looking in the face of the bird and smiling, knowing that he has set himself free of that old design by choosing to be in a relationship with something as humble as the little bird that is calling him to step out of the familiar and into this unknown, uncharted territory where he feels the oneness. Feeling that connection at the heart level, I'm going to invite you to join with me in the heart salutation and say to the heart within and the heart all around, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the heart of the universe ever unfolding.
You are the heart of the universe ever unfolding.
You are a point of awareness in the mind of God.
You are a point of awareness in the mind of God.
You are the emerging evolution of consciousness.
You are the emerging evolution of consciousness.
Let us be an instrument for your joy.
Let us be an instrument for your joy.
Let us be a messenger for your hope.
Let us be a messenger for your hope.
Let us be a creative inspiration for your verb. Whatever that means.
Let us be a creative inspiration for your verb.
I don't know what verb is, but it sounds like the right idea. So open your eyes. The beloved in me bows to the beloved in you.
The beloved
in me bows to the beloved in you. Thank you, Tia. And in this place we are one.
In this place we are one.
The one life, God's life. Perfect. Ever revealing itself anew. Play with it. Trust it. Allow it. Thanks for sending in your tithes. There's a basket in the back of the room. Bless you, Michael. And we'll see you later, alligator.
For listening to our podcast. For more information, visit our website at www.cslhuntsville.org.